can move on, please, to 429.
Adopt a new comprehensive plan for the city of Portland, Oregon.
So let's welcome Eric up and then remind folks that we're taking testimony today from those who signed up to speak on April 20th but who weren't able to testify. And we'll continue to accept written testimony until 5 p.m. on April 27th via email or traditional mail or online through Portland Maps. Eric.
Thank you, Mayor Hills. Just a quick reminder about what you're here to talk about today. We're focused on getting further feedback on possible amendments to the PSC recommended comp plan, which was published in a report on March 18th. And commissioners have also subsequently published several additional amendments through memos, which are posted on the BPS project website. Today's hearing is, as you mentioned, continued from April 20th. This is the third of several hearings devoted to the potential amendments. Testimony on the related item, the supported documents to the comp plan, finished up last week, and so we're not taking testimony on that tonight. So there's just one item today. Also want to remind you about a few next steps. Tomorrow, April 28th, will be your first meeting to start discussing and voting on the amendments that you've put forward. And May 11th is the second of those meetings. At the conclusion of the May 11th session, we will hopefully have a council amended plan ready for final adoption. And at that point, staff will go back and prepare the appropriate substitute ordinance and findings and come back to you for right now what's on June 9th, and then a second reading on and final vote on June 15th.
Okay, great. Thank you. Questions for staff? All right, then let's move directly to continuing the testimony. And again, we have a sign-up sheet of those who were signed up to speak on April 20th. We hope most of them, and therefore you, were able to be here today, so we'll take them in order.
So far, I believe we have about 28 right now.
Okay.
And the first three, please come on up, are number 40, 45, and 47, Steve Kilduff, Kurt Hugo, and Brad Perkins. And they will be followed by 48, 49, and 50, Matt Hogan, Dominique Araya, and Brian Richardson.
Okay, and then I guess I have a few more things I need to put in the record. I want to acknowledge receipt of an additional bundle of testimony that was collected through the online map between April 15th and today, and that's also being added to the record of this proceeding. Welcome, and take it away.
Ladies and gentlemen of the Portland City Council, my name is Steve Kilduff, and I have lived at 3735 Southeast Lambert Street for 15 years. My house is within the area under consideration of Amendment M74, and I'm here to address the amendment to the comprehensive plan. Allowing rezoning to R7 west of 36th Street will put ever-increasing pressure on the property east of 36th Street to be divided into smaller parcels. I therefore recommend that the zoning change not be made. These houses east of 36th Street are some of the most affordable houses in the area. To illustrate this point, in the last 2 weeks, I personally have received unsolicited letters from seven development companies asking if I'd sell them my house. These companies know they can buy my house, demolish it, and replace it with one or two new, more expensive houses. If Eastmoreland proper is designated R7, the pressure to demolish houses east of 36 will only increase. There will be more new houses built, but they will be all more expensive than the ones that were replaced. It's also likely that the demolition of houses in Eastmoreland proper will continue, with the only change being that the new structures will be larger and more expensive still. A couple of examples: former Senator Maureen Neuberger's house in Eastmoreland was demolished because it didn't fulfill the desires of today's homebuyers. Only a couple of years ago, current Senator Ron Wyden bought a large house in Eastmoreland that replaced a much smaller house that sat on the same lot. In each case, the neighbors were not thrilled with the change. If a profit can be made by demolishing an existing structure to be replaced by a newer home, it will happen. Zoning won't change that reality. I think we all can agree the market value will determine what will happen to the existing structures in this area. Changing Eastmoreland property zoning will only increase the pressure on houses east of Southeast 36th to be destroyed and their lots split. Existing houses will continue to be demolished in Eastmoreland. Construction after destruction will continue. Having been a U.S. history teacher and a principal in Oregon secondary schools for over 30 years, I have every confidence in the system of government that exists in our wonderful city. I hope that the decision made concerning this zoning question will be made in favor of the middle-income earners in our region. I hope that your decision will allow more of the modest homes that now exist in my neighborhood to continue to exist as long as possible and not be even more quickly destroyed. Thank you.
Thank you very much. That's a really good point that the zone, that's why we're doing a comprehensive plan, is that the zoning in one place does affect what happens adjacent to it. Thank you for coming in to say that.
Yeah, help us with that, though. I mean, if the goal is in places like East Moreland or Ladd's Addition or Buckman or a wonderful little pocket north of I-84 called Euclid Heights,
yep.
If the goal is to try to preserve those historic structures, and if what we've been hearing is that if the underlying zoning is typically a fraction of the average lot size,
mm-hmm.
what that fraction mm-hmm. might be, that's what creates this, exacerbates the demolition pressure.
Sure.
You're right. There are going to be situations in which there's going to be one-for-one replacement,
right.
where a house is demolished and replaced with a new house.
Right.
And there are regulations about that, and we have a project underway to look at the building envelope size of what
mm-hmm.
the new house might be. So that will probably put more of a damper on that. But some of that's going to continue to happen.
Sure.
I take your point. But if the community's goal is to reduce that hemorrhaging,
mm-hmm.
What would you have us do with the property east of 36th?
I guess if the issue is the historic value of the area,
yeah.
and I'm not disagreeing, yeah. East Moreland is gorgeous.
Yeah, it's basically a historic district
without
a formal designation.
Then help the individual homeowner get it designated. That's gonna slow down the developer because he's gonna say I can't get in. I'm not gonna get in the middle of that.
Mm.
So if you can help the individual homeowner designate their property historically, I think you slow it all down and you don't put pressure on everybody. Because if my house was built in 1950, okay, the electricity it cost $350 to wire that house in 1950. I don't know. It's a great old house, but it's not gonna be historic. My neighbor on one side is being taken down. A neighbor on the other side just sold their house for $450,000. I can't figure it out. But if the issue is history, then let's promote history. I taught history. So let's promote it, and let's help these people say, is your house got significance? Let's keep it. If it doesn't, it's going to get in the way because the rooms are small, the heating system is inadequate. There's going to be a lot of reasons why somebody's going to come in and take it down rather than try and reclimate it.
Yeah, okay, I see. Thank you. That's helpful.
Okay.
Yeah. Welcome. Good afternoon.
Thank you, guys.
You bet. Thank you.
And I appreciate what y'all do.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mayor Hales and Commissioners. My name is Kurt Hugo, and I'm here to testify against Amendment 73, which is the citywide ban on drive-thrus. I am a franchisee with Dutch Bros Coffee, and we, of course, are a drive-thru coffee company. I have been a franchisee with Dutch Bros for over 13 years. I have 6 locations, and over that 13-year period of time, I have served approximately 6 million cups of coffee or transactions. We have not had one single pedestrian automobile accident in that period of time. The amendment addresses the safety concerns of pedestrians interacting with cars, but the combination of pedestrians going to the walk-up window or even the drive-through window as needed with cars coming through the drive-through lane does not create any more unsafe situation than any parking lot, whether it be a parking garage, a parking lot at the grocery store, the TriMet stops, or a MAX station. In addition, many of the drive-throughs in the area are locally owned because we have smaller building designs and models. Locally owned business operators tend to start in those drive-through models as opposed to large company-owned locations. In addition, many of our customers are customers with disabilities, moms with kids in the cars, or other people who just don't have the time or the effort to the ability to get out of the car, and we are serving those needs. Wow, that was quick.
Okay, you got more time.
The fact that we're actually able to maximize density due to the lack of need for large parking lots and the ability to utilize underused parking lots. So, again, the reason that we have so many cars in line is because that's what the customers want. The customers need and want drive-thrus. We don't generate additional trips to our stores. Our customers are pass-through traffic. destination stores, which generate more trips, are actually more of the sit-down model. If you get rid of the drive-thrus, you're not going to decrease the dependence on automobile usage because we're pass-through customers.
Okay, thank you. Thank you very much. Yep. Okay. Good afternoon. Welcome.
Mayor Hales, Commissioners. Brad Perkins, Sullivan's Gulch Trail Committee founder. I'm in support of getting the Sullivan's Gulch Trail and the comprehensive plan map. When the council passed the Sullivan's Gulch Trail concept plan in July 2012, the SGT committee thought it was put on the map. So over the past 4 years, we have had a trail plan with no significance or enforcement powers when dealing with nearby developers. Not only do we need safe routes to schools, but safe routes to work, home, stores, recreation, etc. Better yet, live or work in a building built above the safe route. For safer routes, side street greenways and off-street trails are the best. Any greenway on the street with vehicle speeds over 25 miles per hour are dangerous. Commissioner Steve Novick, as head of the City Transportation Department for 3 years, I believe you don't practice what you preach about supporting safe routes. Bike Czar Roger Geller and right-of-way director Kurt Kruger have approved bike lanes throughout the city, but no support for SGT Trail. The City of Portland, ODOT, and a driver are now facing a $3.6 million lawsuit filed last Wednesday by cyclist Martin Greenaw's family because his death was caused by a poorly designed bike lane that stopped under the 42nd Avenue Viaduct on Lombard, forcing bicyclists to divert into the right lane of 45-mile-per-hour traffic. The suit accuses both the state and city failing to take action to improve the road for bicyclists when they knew of the problem for over a year. The fatality occurred 4 months ago on December 12th, and still nothing has occurred to improve the problem. And also, Commissioner Novick, last Wednesday you were asked by Commissioner Fish about testimony about the Sullivan's Gulch Trail about engineering money, and no engineering money actually has been raised. And there's an email in there from your staff that addresses some money that went to Sullivan's Gulch Trail.
Thanks, Brad.
And it wasn't. Those four items have not been allocated for money. And there's a plan in there, too, as far as what we suggest as to how it should be funded. We're not just coming and blowing steam. Good. We actually have a plan, and we'd like to have the city's support, and private money that we want to raise is part of that plan. Okay? Thank you very much for your time.
Okay. Next three are Matt Hogan, Dominic Anaya, and Brian Richardson, and they'll be followed by Michael Robinson, Gabe Adolph, and Ron Ebersole, 51, 55, and 56.
Okay, welcome.
Welcome. My name is Matthew Hogan, and I'm here to oppose Amendment M42. My home on North Gantenbein, which I've lived in for 22 years, is part of a block of five homes, all built between 1900 and 1910, that would be upzoned from R1 to CM2 by this act of spot zoning. Under the original comprehensive plan, North Fremont was to remain residentially zoned R1. This was in keeping with the findings of the Portland System Transportation Plan from 2007, which clearly designated North Fremont as a local street. According to the plan's findings, North Fremont should not have new commercial development, claiming the increased vehicle count is too big for what is designated as a local street. M42 directly contradicts these findings and was added to the comprehensive plan as a result of the testimony in January by a lone neighborhood property owner and developer. He testified in front of this council that the proposal shared wide neighborhood support by submitting a petition that was utterly fraudulent. There were 20 properties listed on the petition. Four of those were for addresses that did not even exist. For 17 affected properties in M42, there were only two signatures. One of these property owners testified at our neighborhood association meeting that he did not sign the petition despite having been listed as done so, and the second reported that the petition was presented to him as being anti-commercial development on Fremont, and that is why he signed. Three other residents have reached out to us to say that even though their names were on the petition, they did not sign for it. In an utter lack of transparency, a large property at 311 North Ivy, which is owned by the petitioner, was signed for instead by a member of the North Northeast Business Association who is not even a resident of the neighborhood. To date, we have not encountered a single property owner in the proposed zone that supports this amendment, while gathering over 370 signatures on a legitimate opposition petition. It is disheartening that such a fraudulent document was not vetted by the city and presented to us by a city planner as proving neighborhood support for this proposal. This was the first step in a negligent process that had followed this amendment at every turn. Us longtime residents of this neighborhood are all for increased density that will focus on providing low-income housing. The current zoning R1 already provides for this, and there's no reason to change it. Thank you for your time.
Well, thank you very much. Thank you.
Good afternoon. Thank you for the opportunity to speak. My name is Dominic Anaya, and I am just one more voice in the neighborhood in opposition of Amendment M42. This is a small residential neighborhood that is already bookended between two major areas of development, North Mississippi Avenue and the Vancouver-Williams Corridor, with over 1,000 living units and 50,000 square feet of retail space that have yet to be filled. People have already talked to you about the traffic complaints, which I can't stress enough. I don't want to repeat all the concerns, so let me just add the concern of subsidized housing units that are at risk because of this rezoning. There are several units of subsidized housing at Elroy Gardens that are right in the rezoning area that I feel may be lost by any new development that would come in. And at a time when homelessness and affordable housing are such concerns, I would hate to see even more residents of this rich and diverse neighborhood displaced. So I don't want to drone on when you've already heard a number of voices about this, but I worry that this potential rezoning could erode an already challenged neighborhood. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you both. Welcome.
My name is Brian Richardson. I am testifying in support of Commissioner Novick's Amendment 2 in a memo dated April 12th to previous amendments S21 and S22 that would result in maintaining existing single-family R5 and R2.5 zoning in the areas between Southeast 26th and 30th Avenues and Belmont and Stark Streets. The changes proposed by the comprehensive plan to multifamily R1 and R2 are very specific to this 4x4 block area, while leaving surrounding areas of Southeast Portland with nearly identical housing stock unchanged. We would have all of our single-family homes convert to R2 or R1, which I have included as information in the packet I gave you. Many of us seem to agree on the need for middle-density housing, but we should face these challenges and changes together throughout inner Southeast Portland and the rest of the city. Rental housing in my neighborhood is actually relatively affordable due to our mix of single-family homes, duplexes, triplexes, and small apartment buildings. So rather than bringing more density to our tiny area with the potential for 45-foot-tall, four-story apartment buildings next to or replacing single-family homes, we should instead bring our mixed mosaic model to nearby residential neighborhoods. My area is not appropriate for the proposed density increases. We're certainly not a commercial center. We don't have any grocery stores unless you count Plaid Pantry. Stark Street to the north is not a commercial corridor in the way that Burnside or Hawthorne are. It's largely residential and doesn't have a bus line. Belmont to the south is also notably undeveloped and residential through this section. The Sunnyside Neighborhood Association opposes the changes to our zoning, as do my neighbors I've spoken to. We aren't afraid of growth or density, both of which already exist in our neighborhood. We know the city is changing. However, we feel like we're being singled out for large changes to our neighborhood while not asking the rest of the area to chip in. I ask for your support in maintaining the existing single-family zoning in my area while working on more fair and forward-thinking policies on middle-density housing that include more neighborhoods. Thank you very much.
Thank you. It's very helpful. One of the striking things about your submittal here is the age of those houses.
Right.
Some of the oldest in that part of the
state. Yeah, they're almost all built between the late 1800s and early 1900s. Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you all.
Exterior, Michael Robinson, Gabe Adolph, and Ron Ebersole. And they'll be followed by 58, 59, and 61, Dana Krawcheck, Tamara DeRitter, and Samuel Pastrick.
Good afternoon. Go ahead.
Thank you, Mayor. Good afternoon, Mayor, members of Council. My name is Mike Robinson. I'm here on behalf of Providence Health and Services, which operates Portland Providence Medical Center, So I've given you a letter today, and I just wanted to make 3 points for your consideration. First of all, we appreciate the MAP amendment. That's MAP Amendment M67. That keeps an existing small multifamily residential project as a conforming use by not changing it to the Campus Institution 2 zone, and we think that's helpful. It actually supports your goal of affordable housing. Secondly, we appreciate the policy amendment to Policy 6.457. I think that encourages collaboration between the neighbor groups and Providence. We think that's a good model. It helps us develop better plans, and frankly, having open lines of communication with our neighbors is a good thing. I don't think it's ever resulted in a bad outcome for Providence or the neighbors. And lastly, we'd like you to keep thinking about how we can make the transportation demand management policies work. We suggested one policy amendment in our letter dated January 7th. Rather than submitting more amendments, we would encourage you to take another look at that. And as you go forward with the land use regulations, we'll have some more thoughts for how to make TDM measures most efficient for big campus institutions like Providence. So we thank you for your time, and we especially want to thank staff for the time they've taken to work with us on this.
Great. Thank you very much. Appreciate it. Thank you. Welcome.
Good afternoon. My name is Gabe Adolf. I live on Northeast 8th Avenue between Knott and Brzee. And I'm testifying to urge you to oppose TSP Amendment 40116, which would designate Northeast 7th Avenue as a greenway and would result in traffic diverters being installed at several points along 7th Avenue. According to Transportation Bureau estimates from 2 years ago, 5,500 cars a day travel on Northeast 7th Avenue. The greenway designation requires 1,500. This means 4,000 cars a day will be diverted. This could dramatically increase traffic on nearby streets, which from 8th through 14th are all single lane and about half as wide as 7th. They're also home to many families and kids who, like mine, walk and bike to nearby schools, such as Irvington. Peabody has said the proposed diverters would direct cars to Martin Luther King Boulevard, but those of us who live near the construction site at Northeast Russell and 7th know firsthand how determined drivers are to avoid Martin Luther King. When 7th is closed to this construction, even with detour signs at the ends of our block, we still get dangerous levels of cut-through traffic. 7th Avenue does need safety improvements, but not at the expense of nearby streets. I urge the Council to make Northeast 9th Avenue the greenway, which was the plan prior to Amendment 40116. A 9th Avenue greenway improves access to beautiful Irving Park. North of the park, it gives riders a straight shot all the way to Woodlawn. And best of all, it already has the low level of traffic to accommodate a greenway, so it doesn't push dangerous levels of traffic onto adjacent streets. Finally, I know that 7th Avenue Greenway supporters have cited support by neighborhood associations and the BTA. I think these groups have done a great job listening to the people who live on 7th and actually a very poor job listening to the folks who live on adjacent streets. On my street alone, we collected about 80 signatures of neighbors who oppose a greenway with traffic diverters on 7th, and I've included the signatures. The Albina Head Start and Director Ron Herndon also opposed the greenway on 7th, as do many residents of the side streets between Martin Luther King and 7th near Irving Park because it would limit access to their streets. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. I got to look at this again, and I'll do this later, but help me out, and that is, if it were 9th, as you've suggested, and if it has to be, I think it has to be 7th going through the Lloyd District, where do you make the transition?
We didn't get a lot of details about what happens south of Broadway. We had the Peabody had held a meeting, and they gave us the handout that I gave you.
Yeah.
But they kept the discussion pretty focused on between Broadway and Alberta, and so they didn't show us the plan for what happens south of Broadway.
I'll quiz them about that, because obviously we just had a presentation this morning about this, you know, amazing new bridge that we'll be building, we hope, the Banfield at 7th.
Okay.
So, you know, that pretty much dictates where it's going to be at that point. So if it were not on 7th north of Broadway, you've got to get there from here. So I'll take that up with them.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Welcome.
My name is Ron Ebersol. I'm a High Noon board member and the land use chair for High Noon. I'd like to talk on amendments P25 and M70. And basically, we'd like to say, great idea on restoring the neighborhood center for P25. We think it'd be more consistent with the character of the island, but it needs a lot of actual work. We'd also like to suggest that in order to help make it a better neighborhood center, that we see the extension of the light rail out to Hayden Island. This has been a real thorn over the years that it stopped at Expo. We also say that at this point in time, the Hayden Island plan needs to be significantly updated or redone. It's still based around the former CRC concept, has some real problems, and needs to be reflective of where we are right now. And so we'd like to see that be redone. We'd also like to see the height limits reset to the previous 45 feet before the Hayden Island plan. And there's four parcels with 75 to 120-foot heights that would be real inconsistent with the idea of a neighborhood center and with the general character of the island. Finally, we think the local auto bridge to Hayden Island is a bad idea, primarily because it would essentially turn Hayden Island into an on-ramp to I-5 for truck traffic in that area coming from Marine Drive, and it would also form an alternate route for heavy truck traffic. And if you look at all the areas and the way that works, and I used to do a lot of commuting from downtown in the evening, essentially everybody is looking for a way. And that seems to be a bad idea. I'd like to see some additional work. But instead, we would prefer to have the light rail extended and add pedestrian and bicycle.
Okay, thank you very much.
And when we talk about an arterial bridge, it could indeed be, as some of the other ones that we've been discussing, an arterial bridge with light rail transit and bikes and pets, and not necessarily other things. So just there's an errata in the mayor, my proposal for putting the arterial bridge in the constrained list, and that is to specify that it's to East Hayden Island from the Expo Center. It's not the one that's in the West Hayden Island, in the Hayden Island plan that would conform with the now not going to happen terminal on West Hayden Island.
Yeah, we understand that it's not all set, but we're trying to get our words in now.
Yeah, yes. No, that's good. That's helpful.
Appreciate that. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Okay. Next three are Dana Krotek, Tamara DeRitter, and Samuel Pastrick. And then we're going to take 77, Susan Lindsay, 62, Gretchen Hollins, and 64, Mike Connors.
You got slides there, Tamara?
Yeah.
Okay. Carlo, give you a hand with our somewhat arcane AV system. Back, why don't we let Dana go, unless you have AV as well, and then we'll catch up to Tamara. Go ahead.
Old school, just words. Mayor Harrell, members of the City Council, Dana Krafcheck. I'm here on behalf of Broadmoor Golf Course and testifying in favor of Amendment M33. We provided written testimony, and I just provided another copy. This golf course has been owned by this family for over 100 years. They have no intent to redevelop it at any point in the future, but this comp plan amendment process provided the opportunity that for the next generation, if and when they decide to develop some industrial land, that it's actually feasible to develop and has flat land that could be desirable to industrial developers, while also maintaining and preserving the highest quality resources on site. There's been a lot of attention paid to this amendment recently. As you consider this amendment, I want to make sure you keep a few facts and issues in mind. The comp plan designation will not allow industrial zoning tomorrow, next week, next year. You'd still have to rezone the property, which is a very robust public process where appropriate mitigation measures could be imposed. This is just a comp plan designation. It does not change the existing environmental overlay zone, the CRP overlay zone, which was recently updated as part of the airport futures land. A portion of the area that we're proposing for industrial comp plan designation does not have a CRP overlay, which means that in this airport futures update, there were not high enough quality resources on that sort of interior area to be designated with protection. This is really perceived as a potential swap with the Riverside designation. This is 42 acres, roughly, on Broadmoor for roughly 86 acres at Riverside. We have not seen a comparative analysis that says that Broadmoor is somehow superior from an ecological perspective. In the EC analysis in support of airport futures, they were ranked equivalently. As a layperson, I see 80 trees at Broadmoor and 764 at Riverside. Riverside's provided testimony about wildlife corridor opportunities that Riverside provides. I encourage you to take a close look at comparatively the benefits and the values. The rest is in my testimony.
Okay. All right. No, thank you very much. Thank you. Okay. Thank you. Tamara, are you all set?
Yes. My name is Tamara DeRitter. I am chairman for the Rose City Park Neighborhood Association. But first, I would like to represent myself as a professional land use planner. And I am requesting that it's my obligation to inform you that ethically the Oregon land use laws are broken when it comes to air quality. The planning form that we are using in the comprehensive plan places the most disadvantaged population in high-density residential right next to high-volume toxic corridors. I am requesting to include two of the DEQ modeling maps. One is for diesel, and the other one is for benzene. Both of these illustrate the combustion that happens along our high-density corridors. And currently, there is no mitigation, as was promised by the Portland by the Planning and Sustainability Commission in 2009 with the Portland Plan. They decided not to reverse the planning form at that point in time, but to mitigate for the toxicity. Currently, there's no language in the plan that deals with the toxicity mitigation, and what I provide is mitigation through vegetation, design, construction materials, as well as indoor ventilation. So that's my first testimony.
Okay, thank you.
The second is on behalf of Rose City Park Neighborhood Association. We are recommending a transportation system plan, Blue Ribbon Committee, to be formed to vet the plan and the TSP's implementation assumptions to reduce the single occupancy vehicles to 25% of all trips by 2045. The success of this plan hinges on the reduction of the traffic volume. Transportation demand management is an unproven methodology at the scale being proposed, which is the entire city. We strongly urge you to get this implementation correct, right, in this plan, because we are dependent on its success to for our communities and our children. And last is the Euclid Heights should be downzoned to R5 because it contains numerous steep slopes and should not be designated R2.5. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Good afternoon. Welcome.
Good afternoon. My name is Sam Pastrick, and I'm here today with the Citizens Utility Board of Oregon in opposition of Amendments P11, P68, and P85. While the city's comprehensive plan is at its core a land use plan, it's also so much more than that. That's to say, ensuring neighborhood and urban vitality relies on so much more than just solving land use issues. The comp plan is also a framework to inform innovative decision making for the benefit of city residents over the long term and in policy arenas once thought to have less to do with land use and much more to do with, well, transportation, for instance. The connection is now a given, but that wasn't always the case. Ubiquitous broadband access and fair and transparent inclusion in the digital world has become essential to daily life. Connecting disparate communities with disparate services requires clear and pioneering policy around transportation. The same idea is now true for open data and digital inclusion. Therefore, tying land use to open data and digital inclusion is, in our opinion, akin to tying land use to transportation. Specifically, while private utilities, internet service, and technology companies provide communication services and facilities to Portlanders, the city does regulate some aspects of those services, such as the siting of those facilities. And through past broadband adoption plans is now the deep resolution, that's the Digital Equity Action Plan. The city has displayed a pretty strong track record of promoting fair and affordable access to emerging technology and communication services for all Portland residents. More specifically, by removing key language from Policy 2.11 around open data and also from Policies 8.117 and 8.118 around broadband adoption and encouraging regulatory investments in technology and communications infrastructure, neither the city's comp plan, at least as it concerns digital inclusion, nor the deep resolution carry really the needed teeth, in our opinion. We can't precisely know what Portland will look like in 10 or 20 years, but I would argue it's a safe bet that the internet and data-driven decision-making will play a pretty feature role in building healthier, more vibrant, and equitable communities. Knowing this, you all have an opportunity later this month to either lead the charge or bring up the rear on open data and digital inclusion policy, and that's why CUB opposes amendments P11, P68, and P85. Thank you.
Have you submitted that letter in writing, too?
No, but I will.
Would you, please?
Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you all.
Thank you
very much.
Next three are Susan Lindsay, Gretchen Hollins, and Mike Connors. And they'll be followed by, is Mike Wessling testifying? Or okay, then thank you. 65, 66, and 67. Mike Wessling, Mia Reback, and Rick Michelson will be next.
Welcome. Good afternoon.
Hi. Susan Lindsay, and I'm here to, I'm just going to read my notes, but it's going to be tough. I'm here to urge support for amendments S20, S21, and S22, and we're very grateful that those were entered in as amendments. There were many, many zoning changes that were proposed for the Buckman neighborhood, and these are the only three that we stepped up to say, you know, not here. And there was a reason for that. S21 and S22 are in the area that already had had extensive work and approval for a National Historic Register. And I believe you've got a letter there from the Landmarks Commission sort of supporting that, too, that it remain R5. The Buckman neighborhood is the oldest east side neighborhood in the city of Portland, and back in the 1970s, there was an effort to kind of mow down many of the houses and put in apartment buildings. And so what you see now is kind of a hodgepodge of remaining historic houses because activists came forward to stop that. And there's a lot of apartment buildings, too. So we would like to retain the zoning there for S21 and S22. For S20, that's kind of our bridge area. That's between 15th and 19th on Belmont and Morrison, and there's a lot of upzoning that's taking place along Belmont and Morrison all over the place, but there we'd like to maintain it the same because there's some comments, one little comment from BPS about that area is all commercial, and in fact it's not at all. There's many, many residences in there. And it remains a place of affordable housing options, and we hope that it can change, and then when it develops out, it'll be able to develop in situations that are not just studio apartments. That's what we're seeing going in. We're seeing going in very small, 400-square-foot studio apartments that are renting for between $1,300 and $1,400 a month. And when we've pushed back on developers and said, no, it's R1, we want you to build out the R1, we've seen some townhouses and families be able to move into the area. And that S20 area is that bridge between Colonel Summers Park and our school, so we ask for it to remain the same. Finally, in my last 1 second, I'm going to oppose P45 for two reasons. One, that there's a lack of, and nobody really knows about it, there hasn't been a full discussion on it. And second of all, Buckman's sort of already doing middle housing, which is kind of a great concept, and we think it should be applied citywide. There are wonderful close-in neighborhoods, Laurelhurst and Grant Park and Irvington and Selwood and the inner northwest and southwest hills that concept might be applied to have walkable neighborhoods and give more options to people that are more affordable. Thank you.
Thank you.
I don't understand why you're opposing the amendment because it says let's do that.
And what's that?
I don't understand why you would be opposing the middle density housing amendment.
Thank you. So the reason we're opposing it going in right now because we believe there really hasn't been any process around it. And what we were shown, or the map that we were shown by the planning department, details that really essentially where it goes into is in the Buckman and a portion of the, is all of residential Buckman and a portion of the west side of the Sunnyside neighborhood.
So just to clarify, having the policy and the comprehensive plan then allows us to have the discussion thereafter about what is it, where is it, how is it done. It's not that this putting this policy in means it's going to happen everywhere tomorrow. But I think what we are intending is that, yes, Buckman is a great neighborhood, and let's look at other neighborhoods who could benefit from having a mixture of different kinds
of housing. Exactly, because we're sort of already doing it. We're already doing middle housing.
Yes. Yeah, that's why it's in there.
But see right here? I mean that I didn't get that, and I'm glad you're explaining it to me. But I have to tell you, nobody gets it.
Right,
that's what I'm saying. I'm not saying it's a bad concept. I think we need to talk about it more.
But if
we had input saying let's do this, and so we're putting the the concepts in the comprehensive plan so that then we can discuss what is it, where is it, how does it.
Okay, so you're not imposing it then?
No.
All right. Well, thank you. Well, again, nobody understands that.
Right. Well, I think, again, it's probably time for my comprehensive plan speech, which I make once in a while, and that is that the comprehensive plan is the broad policy direction,
sure.
And it gets implemented by the zoning code and by administrative rules and by building permits. So right. it's a hierarchy. And unless, strictly speaking, unless there's something in the comprehensive plan that references a policy, we shouldn't be doing zoning code. We shouldn't be doing anything in the city that's land use related without having that policy in the comprehensive plan. So that's the reason that in response to community input during the process, council thought, this is something we should definitely be looking into because, as you say, it's already happening in Buckman and other places. Let's explore whether it should happen elsewhere.
And if it's a good idea in one place, it's a good idea everywhere, and we should be looking at it.
And we will. But, yeah, I think your point is very important. That is, if we don't build the foundation for that concept in the comp plan, then it's pretty hard to build the rest.
I appreciate you bringing up the concern because there's several things in there that people are like, what does this mean? And we're like, we don't know what it means yet. Well, that's why we have the broad policy, and then we'll have a follow-up.
You know, we work to read just about everything we can in addition to doing our full-time jobs. And we know you're in the same position.
Yeah.
But so I'm just letting you know that I think this is something that needs a lot more conversation citywide.
We definitely agree.
Yeah, thank you,
Susan.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Good afternoon. Welcome.
Hi, thank you. I'm Gretchen Hollins, representing the Sylvan Highlands Neighborhood Association, opposing Amendment N14. Thank you, Commissioner Fritz, for speaking directly with some of our neighbors on this issue. That's appreciated. We in the Sylvan Highlands Neighborhood Association do not feel that luxury condominium developers are underrepresented in Portland. Amendment N14 changes the zoning for a single property at 6141 Southwest Canyon Court so the owner can build 11 luxury condominiums. This spot zoning ignores neighborhood input and doesn't seem like a good use of the opportunity that the comprehensive plan provides. Thank you for the setup, Commissioner Fritz, about the broad strokes. Your planning staff agree with us and do not support this amendment, and the staff did not support a previous zone request change made by the property owner last summer to be included in the comprehensive plan. We were here in December supporting the August draft of the plan and all of the changes it made for our area. This is the only amendment that we don't agree with. Last week, neighbors testified against this zone, and the Sylvan Highlands Neighborhood Association is also opposed to this amendment. We respectfully request that the amendment be rejected and that the property owner be directed to use the regular zone change process. Thank you.
Thank you. Welcome. Good afternoon.
Thank you, Mayor and Commissioners. My name is Mike Connors. I'm here on behalf of Space Age Fuel. Here to testify in opposition to Amendment P32, as well as the mixed-use designation proposals for my client's property. Space Age Fuel is a local company that operates numerous gas service stations around the city, four of which the city is proposing to redesignate and rezone to mixed use. Back in November of 2015, we submitted comments requesting that the City Council delay adoption of the comprehensive plan amendments because you can't adopt mixed-use designations without knowing what the mixed-use standards are going to be, and those mixed-use standards are coming in the mixed-use zone project, which is just now being considered by the Planning and Sustainability Commission. Part of our concern was potential impacts on or restrictions on gas service stations or more broadly drive-through facilities of which a gas service station is under that umbrella. And our fears have been realized. The mixed-use zoning code amendments that have been published thus far show restrictions prohibiting these uses in CM1, CM2, CM3 zones. CM1, it's outright prohibited, no real redevelopment opportunity. CM2, CM3 allows for some redevelopment opportunity, but for a gas service station, it's just not going to practically work or allow for redevelopment. Amendment P32 seems to be either an extension or an impetus for those code amendments because it essentially limits drive-through facilities in corridor and center areas. We're concerned about it because this obviously is going to have significant impacts on my client's existing uses, as well as a redevelopment opportunity. The ability to redevelop a former gas station into a different kind of use is far more challenging than any other kind of use. And one of the stated objectives of this whole process was to avoid or minimize adversely impacting existing uses or property values. This is going to do both for my client. So they're very concerned as a result of that. They're in opposition to P32 as well as the mixed-use designations based on what we've seen of the mixed-use standards draft that's been published.
Well, I'll read your letter, obviously, but have you suggested what designation you want?
Well, retain it, just pull it out of the mixed-use area. In other words, in the letter, we've identified some of the issues that we see with those designations in that area. For instance, one particular area is three properties that are designated as part of a civic corridor area and other properties. But quite frankly, Mayor, my client was not concerned or objecting to the concept of any kind of mixed-use designation, so long as those that designation, the standards that come with it, don't impact their business.
As it exists.
Correct.
Yeah. No, I think we probably share that objective, but we'll look at your letter. But, I mean, I would assume the scenario we want for older gas stations would be to be able to have them be nonconforming uses until such time, and then have the zoning designation to be generous enough in terms of redevelopment intensity to make it financially possible to deal with possible contamination on the site and still build something. I mean, I think that's what we were aiming for with this effort. So, in other words, keep selling gas for as long as the family wants to, but then one of these days, you know, it's a half an acre or whatever it is, it's right on a main street, we want there to be enough development upside so that it's possible to do the mixed-use thing when the owner wants to do it. And I thought that's where we were with those designations. So that's why we really need to know what you think it should be designated.
Well, in terms of designations, it's maintaining the existing designations. In other words, not amending and incorporating it into the mixed-use designation concepts is what we're asking.
I mean, but that's most of the commercial property in the city, one way or another, is getting redesignated.
Well, if you look at the maps for these particular properties, they're actually in outlier areas. They're either grouped in with one or two other properties, or they're on the outskirts of the area where the city is proposing to change it to mixed-use designation. So for those properties, if you look at them on the map, it's perfectly appropriate to keep them where they are, and we've explained the reasons for that. But the real issue, Mayor, is I guess we have a different read or interpretation of the mixed-use standards. They don't, I believe, do what you're believing that they do.
All right, well, that bears checking on my part. But you've also given us the addresses, and that helps.
Correct.
So we can check that with respect to the map. So. Good. All right. Thank you very much.
Appreciate your time.
Thank you all. Thank you both.
The next three are Mike Wessling, Mia Reback, and Rick Michelson. And they'll be followed by 68, 70, and 72, Joe Daniels, Jeff Giesler, and Carol McCarthy.
Good afternoon. Welcome.
Good afternoon. My name is Mike Wessling, and I'm speaking today as a homeowner in the Concordia neighborhood and as a representative of the Portland City Club. The City Club recently published a set of affordable housing recommendations that includes revising Portland's zoning code and zoning map to allow for more missing middle housing types in the city's residential neighborhoods. In many ways, proximity has become the equivalent of opportunity in our city. The closer you are to good schools, active parks, and well-paying jobs, the greater your chances for success. As such, the discussion about affordable housing can't just be about how much housing we have, but where that housing is located. Recent research shows that kids from poor families who lived in mixed-income neighborhoods do better in school and earn more money over their lifetimes than kids who live in neighborhoods of concentrated poverty. At the same time, kids from more affluent families acquire social and emotional skills like curiosity, collaboration, and empathy that help them succeed later in life. The benefits extend to the entire region. Allowing a diversity of housing types in our neighborhoods will promote affordability, make our community more walkable, and reduce carbon emissions. And by reducing the need for people to commute long distances from places where housing costs less, mixed-income neighborhoods can reduce traffic congestion and improve movement of freight throughout the region. And the best part about revising the zoning code is that, unlike the vast majority of other affordable housing solutions, it doesn't cost a dime. Not to say that we don't need those other solutions as well. I'm encouraged by the proposed amendment P45, specifically calling for enabling and encouraging the development of middle housing. It's a good start, specifying areas within a quarter mile of designated centers and within the inner ring of the central city. But if those areas are the limit of where we are encouraging more diverse housing options, then we are falling short of our responsibility to make Portland accessible for people of all incomes. Middle housing, in its many different shapes and forms, has an important role in making all of our neighborhoods more accessible and helping to build vibrant centers and corridors for the future. Thankfully, there are ongoing parallel efforts to examine adjusting the zoning code to allow for additional flavors of middle housing, including a BPS study to adjust zoning near parks, the work of the residential infill project, and overlay zones that would allow for a greater variety of housing types in R5 zones. And just lastly, all of these, in addition to those efforts, I recommend that you take a look at the proposal from the Concordia Neighborhood Association to create a new overlay zone that would allow for any R5 residential property to have multiple units as long as it otherwise conforms to the building envelope and setback provisions of its specific zoning designation. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Rick, welcome.
Good afternoon. I'm Rick Michelson, and I'm here first to thank Mayor Hales and Commissioner Novick for sponsoring Amendment M65, which would allow my property at North Ivy and Williams to be zoned CM3 instead of RH, so it would match the rest of the properties around it and allow ground floor retail. I think that's a good move to complete that district. But what I really want to talk today about is middle housing. I've spent a long time supporting infill housing in residential neighborhoods, and I've done a number of projects myself. And I think it's the right way to go to increase the amount of housing we have. When we were on the Planning Commission, we did a couple of steps. One is we eliminated the parking requirement, which would make these smaller projects possible. We also allowed courtyard housing as an idea, although it hasn't worked out very well. I think it's time to take the next step, and I think the next step is to probably change the way we measure density in those middle zones from units per acre to FAR. I have a site in Northwest Portland where I'm doing a little condo project, and to maximize the profit or make a profit on it, I have to maximize the building envelope. So I'm going to be putting 6 2,000 square foot units on that site. If we measured by FAR instead, I would probably do 8 to 12,000 square foot units or even smaller. But because the number of units is really what controls, it drives people to build the biggest, most expensive units possible. I think that's an easy change. I think it should be made as part of the next step of doing this process. Thank you.
That's an interesting suggestion. Thank you. Welcome, Mia.
Thank you. My name is Mia Reback, and I'm here today to speak on behalf of 350 PDX, the Center for Sustainable Economy, and the Climate Action Coalition, to support amendments P43 and P56 to add policies to reduce carbon emissions and limit fossil fuel distribution in the comprehensive plan. Last November, Portland set itself apart as a climate leader by passing the nation's strongest and most comprehensive ban on fossil fuels, and thank you all for voting yes to support that policy. And thank you all for your commitment to implementing it in the strongest way possible, and we think that sinking that policy in the comprehensive plan is a great way to do so. While the challenge of addressing climate change is great, we think that there are also great opportunities and gains that we can have from the transformation that this crisis demands of us. We think this is exemplified in Policy 6.6 in the plan, a low-carbon economy. But we think we can do more with this policy to set the stage for our renewable energy future by amending the policy to a low-carbon and renewable energy economy, and list the production of renewable energy as an employment opportunity associated with this policy. 350 PDX is working for climate justice and to ensure that those who have been historically left out of the fossil fuel economy are the first to benefit during this transition to the renewable energy and post-fossil fuel era. This is just one of many reasons that we're supporting the Anti-Displacement Coalition and their support on amendments and measures, including opposing down zones and high opportunity neighborhoods. We're committed to addressing the housing crisis and ensuring that our green city is affordable for all Portlanders. I'd like to close by thanking Mayor Hales for proposing these amendments and Michael Armstrong and others at the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability for their work on policies to reduce carbon emissions, limit fossil fuel infrastructure, reduce local demand for fossil fuels, and build a robust clean energy economy in Portland. We previously submitted written testimony on behalf of 350 PDX and the Center for Sustainable Economy in support of these amendments prepared by former Corvallis land use planner Patricia Weber. Thank you all for your time, and please vote yes on P43 and P56.
Thank you. Thanks very much. Okay.
Next three are Joe Daniels, Jeff Giesler, and Carol McCarthy, and they'll be followed by 74, 75, and 76, Rick Johnson, Tim Ramos, and Amy Greenstadt.
Good afternoon. Welcome.
Good afternoon. I'm Jeff Geisler, chairman for Hayden Island, and thank you, Mayor Hales and commissioners, for having so much patience to deal with this huge problem called a resolution to so many problems.
But, big one.
I'll run through this really quickly because 2 minutes goes by fast, but we are against M70 on Hayden Island to High Noon. We do not want any auto land bridge to Hayden Island. We never saw a viable bridge plan through the CRC. We'd like you to remove this amendment for any auto connector bridge to the island. However, High Noon may offer support for a Tillicum-style bridge, light rail, pedestrian, bicycle. And in conjunction with that, we are accepting P25, which designates us as a community center, a neighborhood center. And if we had a light rail bridge that came in, landed on Lottery Row, eliminates our problem there. We get a 45-foot limitation on new construction, so we would have more housing, and we would get our community neighborhood center back instead of Lottery Row. The neighborhood center is quite large, and that would allow for more housing up to a 45-foot level. We also are interested in saying yes on P19 and P16, which kind of interconnects all the neighborhood centers that you're suggesting. We're no on P32. We appreciate our drive-thrus and we like our Starbucks. So, we're no on 6 or P81, the trail which was proposed to go around the island, which would be 30 feet wide. That's going to bring us to the fact that we are for P48 to preserve the manufactured home community, but that trail would basically jeopardize 112 mobile homes, and eventually, because that is a large number of their income, it would probably affect the other 460 homes in that park. Thank you very much.
Thank you. I think the only Starbucks that I know of on Hayden Island requires that you park at the Safeway and walk in.
No, there's one over there.
There's one with a drive-through?
Yeah.
Okay, I didn't know about that.
May I correct
the one
you?
I go to is in the Safeway, so...
There's actually three drive-thrus over there. So.
Okay, thank you. Yes, please.
Am I?
Yes.
Oh. My name is Carol McCarthy. I'm here to urge you to keep the record open for the City Council amendments beyond today. Amendment P45 is on the agenda for tonight's Sweeney Board meeting. Closing the record today will not allow the outcome of a Sweeney vote on P45 to become part of the record. The vote tonight will be taken at the earliest possible time given the March 18th rollout of the City Council amendments. For the vote outcome to be omitted from the record is inconsistent with provisions of the current comp plan, city code, and goal one. The use of the phrase, quote, where appropriate, quote, in P45 to specify where middle density housing would be allowed is not defined. It leaves us at the mercy of possible corrupting forces from advisory committees stacked with people who may have financial interests that stand in direct opposition to protecting the character and livability of our neighborhoods. The planners should have been more transparent and applied multi-dwelling zones, quote, where appropriate, through the MAP app as at the outset of the 2035 comp plan update to allow for citizen involvement. P45 is inconsistent with Metro's 2040 plan, as quoted below. Neighborhoods remain largely the same under the 2040 growth concept. Some redevelopment can occur to better use vacant land or underused buildings. New neighborhoods are likely to have smaller single-family lots, mixed uses, and a mix of housing types, such as row houses and accessory dwelling units. The growth concept distinguishes between slightly more compact inner neighborhoods and the slightly larger lots and fewer street connections of outer neighborhoods. It continues, if you live in an established neighborhood, whether in the heart of Portland or in Gresham or Beaverton, your neighborhood should continue to look and function like it does now. Protecting existing neighborhoods is the most important aspect of the 2040 growth concept. Middle density housing is promoted as affordable, but the amendment language offers no guarantees that it will be affordable. It could have the opposite unintended consequence of increasing housing costs in our neighborhoods. Please vote against P45. Thank you.
In terms of the record, keeping the record open, you're asking that we keep the opportunity for written testimony open until...
If we vote tonight, it might take us a week to get the letter in, you know, another week.
I'll see how much frowning I'm get from